Kennedys, President Franklin, Delano Roosevelt, addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Here we go, Fireside Chatters. How the hell are you? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and trying to stay one step ahead in sunny San Diego. I'm still Greg Carlwood, and I think we've all been down the false flag road a bit in our investigations of the shadowy puppet masters, from 9/11 to Aurora to Sandy Hook and more. Most of us are no stranger to these threads, but it's easy for us in the US to get stuck in the American bubble and lose sight of what's happening in other parts of the world, and see where that very same playbook we're familiar with might be used elsewhere on the earth in the game for total global domination. And it's also nice to acknowledge we have listeners all over the world, and we can shine the spotlight their way a little bit. And that's what we're doing today with our returning guest, Ollie Demengard, the man and main spotlight shiner behind LightOnConspiracies.com and author of Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion. Last time he was here, we talked about the rock star killings of Operation 40, Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, Bob Marley, and Whitney Houston. It was a great show. I'd recommend it to anyone interested in the topic. But today we're talking about the increasing number of false flags around the globe, some we hear about more than others. But Ollie is the man, and he's been analyzing and researching global politics and the movement of the New World Order for decades, and he's one of the best people imaginable to walk us through what we've been seeing in this area, and I'm so happy to have him here. Ollie, my man, welcome back to THC.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's a real pleasure and honor.
Honor and a pleasure for me too, my friend. I know today's show, our focus is going to be these false flag events and their staged elements. But because we talked about Whitney Houston last time, and now since that episode aired just a couple of years later, her daughter dies in almost the same way on the same day. Very strange, wouldn't you say?
It's almost 3 years, very, very weird and very, very sad, I would say. If you remember right, Bobby Christina almost died one day before Whitney, right, in a bar in the same hotel, the exact same way as she later died here in Atlanta. But what is very strange about both of them is that according to the autopsy report with Whitney, she was found face down, and there was even small little burn marks on her face because it seemed like the water had been very hot when she was put face down in it. And there was some, well, we went into a lot of details last time, but there were some very, very strange things happening around the day on the site. You know, they had this pre-Grammy big party going on with 800 guests downstairs. She died officially in the afternoon, and her body was left there until after midnight, which I find extraordinarily weird. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the autopsy report as well, you have the technical checkup and tests of her body is carried out more or less exactly around midnight. You know, very strange things that they checked if she had been raped and so on. That's just around midnight, like 3 minutes to midnight. They checked her pubic hairs and so on, meaning that this poor woman, not only had she been murdered, but they didn't take her away from the murder site, but left the body there for an additional almost 8-9 hours. And then the technical forensic team, as far as I've been able to find out, they didn't arrive until 10 p.m. So why did they leave the body there for such a long time? And what were they doing with it? Because here we're talking about some major weird things, I would say.
Yeah.
Then we have Bobby Christina, beautiful young lady who very sadly died. I mean, they turned off the machine the very same date as when Whitney was killed. Mm-hmm. And here we have again, as far as I've been able to find out, she was found face down as well in the bathtub. You know, who does that? Either we're talking about a suicidal person who couldn't bear the loss of her mother. I mean, that is possible. And that is why she did it in the identical same way. Or somebody there with a more sinister agenda is behind it. I don't know at this point. It's I haven't been able to find out a lot about this case, but it sure is a very weird and tragic event for this family, losing two of the members like this.
Yes, it is very sad and very strange. Another point that you can either chalk up to coincidence or another aspect of the ritual, both Beverly Hills, where Whitney died, and Roswell, Georgia, which is where her daughter died and is a weird name in itself, both of these locations are on the 34th parallel, and that wouldn't be the first time that location and coordinates have connected events, especially in that 33rd, 34th parallel band. But I don't know really what to make of it. Do you think that is an important aspect of it, or do you think that's just a coincidence?
It's very easy to read too much into these details. At the same time, the group behind many of these assassinations are very much into dates and locations and ritualistic, weird stuff. So it's a good observation. I would put it as one of the jigsaw puzzles into what will be a future solution, hopefully, to what happened.
Yeah, man. So that is tragic and strange enough, but let's get into some of these shootings, these quite possibly staged events. I mean, we've seen several here in the United States, but now it seems like they're on a world tour, just going all over the place. Just in the past 6 or 7 months, we have events in Paris, Copenhagen, Sydney, and Ottawa, and a couple others. And they all seem to fit a pretty predictable pattern, which is one of the first clues someone can look at to see if these events really are random or if they're part of a larger agenda. But, you know, you've been looking into these pretty heavily. What are you finding, man?
I've spent some 30 years of my life looking into these things and learning how they think and how very strict they are. They are not very flexible. I would say they haven't got a lot of imagination either when they carry these things out. They're all based on the old Roman tactic, problem, reaction, solution. I know we talked about that before. I'm just going to repeat it because it's so essential to understand what's going on. The people in power, in so-called power, they secretly create a problem. The reason for that is to get the reaction from the population. We're talking globally now. And the reaction is always fear-based, like, oh my God, something needs to be done. Where it's an emotional reaction they're looking for. So we do not use our skills of observation or good thinking. We just freak out and saying, oh my God, we're under attack. Something needs to be done. And then we turn towards these people that we are not aware of secretly created the problem. That will then serve us the solution, and we will welcome it. We will even see them as heroes, you know. And the solution is every single time something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Mm. Problem, reaction, solution. And every single time as well, you will see the solution, if it's a false flag or if they are the ones behind it, the solution is the same every single time. You have to pay. You have to give up your civil rights, your human rights. You have to accept more and more militarized police, robocops, military vehicles in the streets, martial law. Give up the rights for privacy for your computers, for the surveillance cameras, for scanners, for you name it. I mean, if you look at helping homeless people or people in the elder care or schools or something, no, sorry, no budget for that. But if they want like another super duper high tech surveillance, triple X, super blob, blah, 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 whatever technology, $2.4 billion, not a problem. Let's get four of them, you know. So this is the signs to look out for. When you see them, before you even start looking into the details of what's going on, see what happens straight after these things. Because nowadays, they're down to serving you the whole scenario right in front of you on the TV. You will have a reporter, which is very often involved in the false flag themselves, so that they will report, oh, this horrible thing has happened. The problem, description of the problem. They will interview somebody on the scene saying, oh my God, they were like animals. They were chopping him up in pieces or something like that to get the emotions going from you. Oh my God, that's awful. And then very often the reporter within the next 20, 30 seconds will serve you the solution or part of it saying, oh my God, we need more strict gun control. or is this a new case of blah, 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 so that we need stricter airport security? Or, you know, is this a new thing that will against the Jewish population so that Palestine, these type of things. Mm-hmm. It's like it would be served right after. And I would humbly suggest that I believe that what we're looking at nowadays is like a rock tour on a global tour, a rock group, but like a theater group, like a, almost like a musical without the music on a global tour. We're looking, I would suggest that we might be looking at the exact same people running around in SWAT team uniforms in Paris, Denmark, Ottawa, Sydney, and so on. The same background extras in the background, the same makeup artists, the same people taking care of the weapons, explosives, these type of things, directors, but also marketing agencies and PSYOP people with military advisors and so on. Hmm. And I believe that this group, it's a small, limited group. We're talking like maybe maximum 100 people being transported in army planes from between American army bases mostly or NATO bases, flown in, taken in buses to the site on location with local backup in the form of the key people in the government, key people in the police force and legal forces, backing them up also with using people from the Stay Behind Gladio network to carry out these operations and then straight back into the army planes and off to the next place before people even react and see what happened. But the thing is, it's one thing to have theories. It's another thing to come forward with evidence. And I try to build as much as possible on facts and evidence. Mm-hmm. I only wanted to say that a friend of mine, a CIA whistleblower by the name of Chip Tatum, you can find him on chiptatum.com. He's a former CIA deep cover agent for 25 years, a black op assassin, one of the Night Stalker pilots, you know, these black helicopters. Mm-hmm. He was also one of the pilots in the Iran-Contras whole weapons down to the Contras, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and loads of cocaine back into the States. And he was also the commander of an ultra-secret hit team called Pegasus, which was under the direct control of George Bush Sr. They did at least 17 assassinations globally. I mean, if you've ever seen The Real Deal, he is the closest you can get to a real James Bond, but in the military area, you know, wow. Incredible person. Yeah. And he became a whistleblower in the mid-90s, and he's survived, which is absolutely incredible, just because he's gathered so much evidence against these people, George Bush Sr. especially, and so on. But I've had the, since he has also been involved in different false flag operations, it is extremely interesting to discuss these things with him because then you get his input, you know, from the inside.
Right.
And he said, when I put forward this theory about the same people being transported, he said, it's not only possible, it's plausible. That's what he said.
Man.
Because one of the questions here, It's always the same big question mark. How can you control a group like that?
Right.
How come there are no whistleblowers? How come? And so on. So I asked him those exact questions. And he said, it's very, very simple. You keep the group as small as possible. This is why also we see recurring the same people acting, you know, like a victim in one false flag and a witness in another one, a mother in another, third one, and so on. You've seen Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, all of these things where people pop up, the same crisis actors and so on. So this is one of the negative things about keeping it to a small group, but they need to control all parameters. And this is why they do it like this. He also says that the reason for no whistleblowers so far is that you pay them very well. That's normally you know, people do things for money.
Right.
And they've got loads of money behind these things. So that is not a problem at all. Then if somebody would still consider speaking out, they just threaten them. Maybe they beat them up or something like that. If that is not enough, then they just kill their pet, the one of their kids, or they kill one of these crisis actors and make it very clear to the rest of the group that they're making a statue and an example, so that if anyone else would do something similar, they would end up, you know, chopped up in a barrel in the Hudson River or something like that. So that is a very efficient way of keeping people quiet.
It definitely is.
But one of the beautiful things I find is that good actors are hired, you know, they are used in commercials and theater plays, films and so on. So all of the good ones are already taken. So what these guys have to do is they need anonymous faces that have not been used anywhere else. So they have to be happy with real amateurs, really bad actors, many of them. And this is also where you would see that these people, the witnesses and false flags, or the people being interviewed and so on, they're crap actors, many of them. And one of the things that gives them away is what is called duping delight. You know, they talk about this awful thing. Oh, my dad just got his head chopped off, you know, by ISIS or whatever. And you see the face of the daughter, which should be absolutely torn apart with grief, and the woman is sitting smiling.
Yeah.
This is the smiling thing is a very recurring thing, and it's almost like they're laughing, having a good time, you know, but then and sometimes you can even hear, you know, like mess up things like so what are we supposed to do next, or is this a real take, or isn't it, you know, these things in the background if you turn the volume up very much. So these are the things to look out for when you look afterwards, you know, the interviews with so-called family members, because you have to see it's not only the event itself, but it could be the family gathered around the so-called funeral, or in interviews afterwards, or people that have done so-called heroic things during the terror attack or something like that. These people will be part of the false flag, including the official investigation. These people are, it's the same as when you carry out real assassinations or real terror acts, when it's inside jobs, the investigation will be on standby, so that as soon as it's carried out, they will just move in very quickly, very brutally, and kick all honest, decent detectives and forensic experts. All of these real good guys are knocked to the side, and in goes this their own investigation with key people that they can control, so that they make absolutely sure that no one will ever get any close to the real truth. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a brick wall. I've been up against it for many, many years. So I never approach the official investigation because I know they're part of it, you know.
Yeah.
And one of their tasks as well is to deal with people like myself. If someone like myself will not give up and just push and push and push, they just they have what is called cleaners, and they come and get rid of you, clean you away, you know, get rid of a problem. So very, very scary. I have two, unfortunately, I have two friends myself who is no longer with us. So, and I also moved from Sweden because I had a visit and it freaked me out. So I've been living in Spain now for many years.
Huh. You got to be careful out there, man. This is dangerous, revealing such a key piece of the giant puzzle. And the things you're pointing out are definitely very key things to look for in these, with these witnesses after the events happen. But when it comes to the events that we have seen in the past 6-8 months, what are some of the commonalities in the details of the events that lead you to believe that it could possibly be the same troop or the same playbook that we're seeing over and over again?
Okay, for one thing is that it's almost, you know, like this, I mentioned that there was marketing people in this.
Yes.
Because they need to get to our subconscious. You know, it's just like how to, instead of promoting, you know, more surveillance and more military police in the streets and give up your rights. It's the same as if you were coming forward with a new type of cornflakes or something like that. How to get to the public subconscious, how to get them to accept, especially with GMOs and so on, how can you bypass all the normal way of thinking and defense systems in the human psychic, how to pass it? And normally they use like logos and jingles and these type of things that they can't really do that here. So they try to get to you in other ways, like slogans, themes.
Yeah, never again, Boston Strong.
They get to you through the dates of when these things happen, when these so-called terror attacks happens. It's almost always on like Veterans Day, Remembrance Days, Armistice, this day, Halloween, Valentine's. You know, these type of days where you can get to the patriotic feeling or the emotions. Also, they go very much for the location where it's done. So when I come to a scene, I always check out the, you know, Google map, the whole thing. What was on this location before? Is it a historic site where they used to execute people? Or is there any kind of Freemasonry monuments close by? What's the name of the streets? It's anything from, you know, like ads on the vehicles close by or in the background of photos, or you just have to be very observant of the details. And I even think that it's come to a point now where they've started to do what is it called, product placement, you know, like in movies where you see the guy, he drinks a Budweiser or something like that. Right. And even though he holds the can, you can still see Budweiser on it. You know, this is not by coincidence. That is product placement, you know, because they know millions of people are going to see it. And so this is how they do it. And I would suggest when we go through, for instance, the Paris thing, that this is exactly what we see. Because if you haven't noticed yet, I can only point it out that I would say every single time you hear about ISIS or you see a photo about ISIS, which is a total inside job, in my opinion, people dressed out like Ninja Turtles, but doing total inside jobs. every single time it's Toyota, sponsored by Toyota. All the vehicles in the photos, in the whole caravans, all of that is Toyota. And when all of these events are filmed by bystanders or people in the neighborhood or the so-called terrorists film themselves, every single time I've been looking into it, they use GoPro camera.
Yeah.
Coincidence? Yeah. I don't know, but that's the camera. It's not, there are many different of these action cameras, but it's the GoPro camera as far as I've been able to find every single time. Then you have, there was a Rothschild-owned company that bought Charlie Hebdo just a week or so before this thing happened. At that time, I think they had an edition of 60,000 copies. That went up to, as far as I have been informed, 7 million after this hit. So it was only a profit of 10,000%, you know.
Right.
And you have the photo of the blood in the newspaper office and so on. Next to the blood, which is very strange and looks very staged when you look at the evidence and compared to real crime scenes, there's a bag standing right next to the blood where it says Puma.
Huh.
And you go down to the site where all of these things were carried out with Google Map. You go street level, you look around, and exactly where this so-called police officer is said to have been shot, you look straight into the side of a big, big truck where it says rent a car and then website address. Is that by coincidence or not? You know, the car that the terrorists were using in Paris, that is one of the main giveaways. Do you know, you've seen the video, haven't you, where the two terrorists stop in a black Citroen, they jump out and they shoot this police officer headshot on the pavement. You've seen that, right?
Right, right, of course.
That vehicle is a Citroen C3 from 2014 with chromed side mirrors and white extra lights on the front sides, or small lights on the front side, and also with a special type of wheel. The back window has been shot out in a so-called gunfight with some of the police, or I don't know how it's been crushed, but that's that vehicle. But then the vehicle that they later abandon, and where the ID of one of these brothers, I mean, that is the evidence that pointed toward these brothers. Very, very lucky, I must say, that they managed to leave that thing behind in the car. That vehicle is a Citroen C3 from 2013 with black side mirrors and no extra light in the front and different wheels.
Huh.
Not the same vehicle. I would say, major mistake here. But when you see that vehicle being lifted up, there's especially one where you see the forensic team has looked at it, and they lift it up on a truck. That car is so polished, it looks like a showroom example. And I would humbly suggest that we might look at product placement here again. That photo, because they know that billions of people are going to see it. Here we go again. GoPro, Toyota, Citroen, Puma, rent a car.
Huh.
Because when you look at these things, they always, also on the stock market, you can see insider trading just before it happens. A lot of things happen, and then boom, they make a killing, literally. But that's also the way to backtrack, because you will see how could they know about this thing if it was not insiders. So the stock market is a really good place to track down these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you say like, oh, it's such a tragedy with the JFK assassination or the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme when he was murdered. Well, it was for some people, but it was also the all-time high on the stock market, the Swedish stock market, almost the all-time high. The murder of him, because insider people knew and they made absolute billions. Same with 9/11, same with JFK, and so on. This is also why many times these things happen on a Friday afternoon, because my theory is that is when, as soon as something like this happens, then the stock market closes out of respect for the deceased. They stop it, they block it, and then they have until Monday morning, when the stock market opens again, to lock down currencies, to do all kind of trading and fixing and preparing, so that they made absolute billions when the stock market opens again on Monday morning.
Yeah, man, it's very dark, but I love the way you break these things down, because to people who watch The Elite and see how possessed by greed they are, these points you're making seem pretty par for the course once you're familiar with their general playbook and how far they'll go. But even 5 years ago, I might have been a little more resistant, a little more shocked by the suggestion of product placement. But it does seem like, why not? If you're carrying out these things, paying to set the stage, why not slide in just a little more bang for the buck? You know, if you're someone who considers these false flags. And I do think more and more people are getting on board with that idea.
I would very much like to go into some details, and then you can make up your own mind.
Please.
Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. When I left Sweden, like I said, I was threatened, and I said, this is not worth it. I'm freaking out here. So I took my family. We left. We came to the beautiful island of Mallorca, the year 2000, and we started with absolute nothing. And I was looking for jobs everywhere. And one of the first jobs I got was as an extra at a film company on Mallorca, where they did loads of commercials and real films as well. And as an extra, it is a very boring job. You know, an extra is one of these guys or girls that walks in the background, sits in the background, whatever, in the background. And these people are driven to the location very early, you know, especially if there's many extras, because then makeup and all of these things. So you can, sometimes you have to come like 5 o'clock in the morning and leave maybe 8 o'clock in the evening. And you do more or less nothing the whole day, just waiting for everything to be set up. And then when the shooting really starts, then that's where the action is. And so on. What happened was that instead, most people were just sitting around, spending the time picking their nose, doing absolutely nothing. But I was so eager to get a job with this company to be able to supply my family, support my family and so on. So I was very eager to learn as much as I could about the film business, hoping that they would give me a job. So instead of sitting around, I was helping them. I was doing everything, you know, everything from makeup to electrician jobs to lighting to, you know, clothing. I was trying to learn as much as possible. So, and this has come out, turned out to be extremely helpful for me when I look at these things, because if they are false flag staged events, then they are set up exactly like a film set. They are actually film sets, because they are aimed at reaching an audience through the TV, through the black box in front of you. They're not aiming at persuading anyone on a street level. It's the millions out there on the other side of the box. These are the people they aim for. So I would say that up until, I think after 9/11, that there were real events. Lots of people got murdered for sure, for real. But then it came to a point, I think, where they were starting to have increasing problems with especially mothers of dead victims, because mothers are, when they lose their child, that's it. They have nothing more to lose, you know, and they will not back down before they find out the real truth. You will see this globally, you know, the mothers in Argentina and many other countries as well. The mothers, you do not fuck around with the mothers, you know, because they will not back down. And yeah. I think it came to a point after 9/11 where they just said, listen, guys, we need to do this, you know, to for us to be able to work the way we need and so on. We need space, you know, so we can't have all of these family members following us everywhere. So I believe that is where they started doing staged events where it's not even happening for real. We're seeing film sets, you know, like Sandy Hook and these places, right. Film sets. It was not a real event. Nobody died and so on. And it was carried out with crisis actors and so on. People can even go there and apply as a crisis actors. I think it's crisis-actors.org and other websites where you can apply and become one of these people. I would totally not recommend it, but that's the way it's carried out.
Wasn't there a show host who did something like that to get a few details?
Yeah. What's his name? Geo from Truth Frequency Radio, I think, or Revolution Radio. Yeah, they did an Chris Geo. He did an absolute incredible thing because he phoned them up and recorded the whole call, the conversation where he applied, and they said he spoke to the casting woman, very nice woman, very polite, and she's, yeah, great, you're so welcome, and so tell me what do you look like, and what do you think? Well, he described himself, and he said he had a background, I think high school and university, and she said, but by any chance do you have a beard? And he said, yes, he was lying. Yes. She said, that's excellent because we need a headmaster. We got this upcoming thing in Oklahoma and we need a headmaster there. So would that be of interest? He said, yeah, of course. So great. And they made they booked a date, you know, so he could come and meet the director and so on. Of course, he never went, but it's so weird to hear this because it's so down to earth, so relaxed, so. I don't get it. I mean, here we're talking about people into what I would call real terrorism because this is what they carry out. I mean, terror acts on the population, even though it's not carried out, the measurements that they take are of the magnitude of terrorism. So very, very odd.
Yeah. Maybe we can get into some of the specific events because time is just flying by and I love getting into these stories. But with these most recent ones, your background being that you've been in filmmaking, you've noticed some of these things in these particular events, but in particular the event in Paris, right?
The Paris one and the Copenhagen one. We go back to the video I said where the black Citroen comes and there are two terrorists that jumps out, runs up and shoot a police guy. Let me take that one apart and then you can make up your own mind. When you make when you do a film shoot, you tell the background actors that, for instance, if I were part of it, they would say they would paint a point on the pavement saying this is point A, and they would put a little cue marker, it's called a white dot somewhere else, and saying that's point B. So when we scream background action, you start walking from, or whatever it is I was supposed to do, walk from point A to point B. And then they say, thank you. And then you go back to point A. And then when it's time for the next take, they will scream background action. It's always background action first and then action. And the reason for that is they need continuity with the background so that when they cut together the final scene, you can't have a guy jumping around in the background, moving places. You know, he needs to, if he's walking, he needs to keep walking, even though you cut to other parts and so on. Mm-hmm. So they do that with all background extras and also with vehicles. Because if you have a vehicle, sometimes the vehicle needs to stop in a certain position because of camera angles and so on. So you normally put like a cue marker in the middle of the street or wherever you want the cue marker. It's the driver to be able to see it. That can be a line or a cue marker. And sometimes there's also one sort of like lengthwise if the car needs to stop in a certain position. Also, if it's filmed in a street, in a city, what you need total control of the background. You can't have pedestrian walking up and suddenly looking into the camera saying, what's going on here or anything. You need that it's your people in the whole area. So normally the producer goes to the local authorities, get the permission to close off the street so that he is in control of all vehicles, all people, and so on. And here in Paris, you will see that in all the events, there's only one vehicle moving. There's no people on the pavements. There's no cars, other cars moving. Just the one. I would very much suggest the streets have been closed off. And when you look at the vehicle, when the vehicle has stopped, you will see that there's a black line exactly as a cue marker, centered exactly center under the car. Under the front of the car, which would be exactly such a marking. Then to the right on the passenger side, there's a trainer, a shoe, put right outside the door. So, of course, one of the shooters has dropped his shoe. You check the shoes of the guys, both of them have shoes on. And then when he comes back, he picks up the shoe, throws it in the car, and they take off. So it was their shoe. I would say that is, instead of a cue marker, just marking the position, this is where you should stop. Then you have, like I said, it was the wrong vehicle, and you have, it's said that you can hear the shooting. If you turn up the volume really loud, you will hear in the background that there's children playing and laughing. The shots are fired, children still playing and laughing. That is not a normal human behavior. If somebody starts firing a high-powered rifle or automatic weapon, people freak out. You know, they scream, they run away, they do not keep laughing. Mm. I would say this is a soundtrack that is added afterwards. Also, the sound and impact of these shots is very powerful.
Right.
And I'm an amateur on these things, but I've looked at a digital version of these sound things, and the echo pattern of this fits more into when you record a shot being fired between buildings, you know, if it's a street with buildings on both sides. But here we have buildings on one side and an open area on the other way. So there would not be the same echo pattern. So I would say this is added afterwards to add effect to the whole thing. Then you have the police guy. He's rolling around on the pavement. So apparently he's been hit. And he's holding his hands to his leg. So, of course, he's been hit in the leg. But then when the so-called terrorist comes running up towards him, he puts up his hands like this, like, oh, don't hurt me. And you look at his palms, absolutely no blood. Leg, absolutely no blood. Then you have when the guy on the driver's seat, the driver, when he runs up to the pavement, you will see that there's a white cue marker or a white dot that could very well be a cue marker on the pavement, exactly where he runs up. Then he runs along, he passes the police officer, and then where he runs down into the street again, there's another cue marker. And then in the middle of the street where he turns around and runs back towards the car, there's a third cue marker, exactly had it been a film set. Then, of course, the whole thing is filmed with a GoPro camera. Surprise, surprise. And then you have the famous headshot. I mean, if this happened, awful, awful. You look at the way these two terrorists move around. They're very relaxed. It's like they're out taking a jogging tour. Not the way normally if you've been to war zones or things like that. It's a scary thing, and people are very pumped with adrenaline because that's the way it goes, you know, high pulse and so on. Here, very relaxed. They're just running by, and he's not even checking if his shot really hits. Then you you see, you slow it down in extreme slow motion, and you will see that when the so-called shot is fired, sound-wise, there's absolutely no recoil from the weapon. Absolutely, this is an AK-47, 7.6165. It's a powerful weapon, you know. There's no recoil and no impact on the head. And if you've seen people getting a shot on that distance, it is a very awful sight. There's no blood, there's no brain, there's no impact in the pavement, nothing like that. There is what looks like a ricochet coming from the pavement upwards and in a right angle. But if you slow down and zoom in extreme slow motion, you will see that this is a smoke grenade that is that it comes from the police officer's left hand. He's the one that makes it explode. And you can see there's especially one frame when you can see the small black canister in his hand where the smoke comes from.
Wow.
So I would say absolutely no shots fired. And the sound is added afterwards. The smoke is there as a smoke grenade. Then you have, like I said, there was no blood from the impact. Also, when you look at the photos, when this man is put, taken up and put on a stretcher, still no blood on the stretcher, no nothing. And also they give him CPR, which is, I think, not the best thing for a head wound. You know, if you got a hole in your head and somebody is pumping your chest, that is not a good way to go. But they keep doing these CPRs at the false flag because it looks good, you know. Mm-hmm. It's mouth to mouth and CPR, that's the thing. And then later we have the BBC who turns up. They have a very bad habit of being part of these things. You have the 9/11 when the BBC reporter, the female reporter, standing and saying, "Oh my God, Building 7 has just come down. Very sorry, it's still there behind you for another 20 minutes." And here, the guy is from the BBC. He's standing there. "Oh, it's so tragic. You know, this is hours afterwards." And he says, "Behind me, you can see the flowers and the candles and the blood that has been put on the pavement." His words, "The blood that has been put on the pavement." Freudian slip here. And then you look at the position of the blood, not where the man's head was. It's like almost like maybe 3-4 feet to the side. You can compare that to there's an ad poster thing. You can compare the position to that and you will see it's not in the correct place. And also when the reporter is standing there, there is a red big whatever that has been put there, and it's like 4 square meters, you know, massive, but nothing when this whole thing happens. And it just goes on and on and on like that, the whole thing. I can take it apart, every single part, but I think I made my point here that something strange is going on.
Absolutely. I'm with you, man. I've been watching these things too, and it's like I almost just stopped watching the news because they just fit such the same mold. We also see a lot of times there's two events going on. There's like a secondary event in the same city that happened several times.
Can I intervene there? Because I spoke to Chip about this and he said when these things, they have like staff meetings beforehand planning these things, and they have a very strict timeline, and they say, okay, what is the effect we're looking for? What is it that is required to do this? They have staff meetings before planning the whole thing, and then right after it's carried out, they have a follow-up staff meeting, and that meeting is there to see, did we manage to get the required effect, or do we need to amplify it? And often they need to amplify it. Something goes wrong, something that is not carried out the way it was supposed to, and then they do a secondary thing. So very good observation, because this is exactly what happens. One thing, no, wasn't enough, and then boom, it hits again. They hit again.
Right. It also helps to kind of just muddy the waters. You know, people are watching TV at 10 a.m. and hearing about the Charlie Hebdo shooting. Then they're watching TV at 11 a.m. and they're hearing about this other situation where Muslims have taken hostages. And it kind of makes it so when you're just going about your day, working your 9-to-5, you're like, I don't really know what happened, but clearly something bad happened over there. And that's about all people get as far as the details. They don't dig any deeper.
the thing is that what they want is create fear. They right. try to control us with fear. Fear is their weapon. So the more they can freak us out, the better. And they want to make it us believe that we live in a totally crazy, totally violent world filled with terrorists that can blow you up any day, you know. And these terrorists now, it used to be Russians and East Germans, Bulgarians before in the Cold War. Then when the wall came down, they had to look for some new thing. They went for the Muslim one that worked for a long time. Then that came out of fashion almost. And so they started going for the geek and everything, you know, the blonde Scandinavian too. And soon, I tell you, soon we're going to see, if this continue, we will see like suicide grandmas or something like that. So you will start fearing your own grandmother. Or, you know, suicide Muslim granddads or so, you know, just to get the fear level up there, because they're running out of options, you know.
Yeah.
It's like them having recorded like 34 different episodes of Rambo or Rocky. I mean, how many times can you change the theme? Not easy. So they're running out of the, and this is why it's getting easier and easier. But when it comes to the theme, I would say the Charlie Hebdo, we're seeing here that, oh my God, there's some Muslim youngsters here who are so offended because there's these caricatures made of Muhammad, you know, making fun of the Prophet. So we are supposed to believe that these young people, they're not so upset about like thousands of Muslim children and innocent people being killed in unjust wars around the globe. That is not what will trick them, you know, to go out on a killing spree. No, no, no. It's the cartoon. And if you go back to this started, we're talking about these themes. I think it started, the first part of this was on Valentine's Day, 1989, I think it was, when Ayatollah Khomeini put a so-called fatwa on Salman Rushdie, a death threat on Salman Rushdie, the author, because he had written a book called The Satanic Verses, where he said something about, I believe it was that Muhammad's mother was a prostitute or something like that. And so this started a whole global media witch hunt almost. Then the second one, I put a big question mark around these, because many times I would say these are psyops, you know, to create diversion, to you know, start us fearing and hating each other and fearing minorities and so on. So they divide and conquer, the old Roman template. That's what they do. So that was chapter one in this thing. Then the second chapter was a Danish newspaper called Jyllands-Posten, who made cartoons of the Prophet, and that made a whole global thing again. Then chapter three, in 2007, there was a Swedish cartoonist, his name is Jan Wilkes, and he made an awful drawing of Muhammad with the body of a dog. That is said to have put him under death threat, and he's had to have bodyguards since 2007. Yeah, right. I mean, it's 8 years from a really, really bad drawing. But anyway, that was chapter four. Then was Charlie Hebdo. And then we have the thing in Denmark, which was exactly the same theme as well, where the exact same artist, his name was Lars Vilks, not Jan Wilkes, Lars Vilks, who was at the meeting in Copenhagen. And the date they had this meeting was on Valentine's Day, which is exactly the same day as Khomeini put out the fatwa in 89. So we're back to the same dates. And even as far as I've been able to find out, part of the title for this speech that day was freedom of speech, blasphemy, and fatwa, the exact same word. You see, so they're doing it again and again. And this is a way how they repeat, just like if it was an ad for Coca-Cola, it would be Coca-Cola and then Coca-Cola. The more you say Coca-Cola, the more it gets into your mind. So here, the same theme to get it in there. And then they keep repeating keywords in the news as well.
Also, I wanted to say in Copenhagen, wasn't another name coincidence that it was called the Gunpowder Cafe where the shots were fired?
Yeah, the Gunpowder Keg Cafe.
Yeah.
No, but there's so many. There's so many of these things. You have if I can go now, we leave Paris and we go to Copenhagen.
And this one you predicted in advance, right? You were on the radio and you said, "Hey, look out! This might be one of these hot spots."
Exactly. No, not one of them. I said that is going to be the next one, because a few months ago, a month or two before it happened, I'm in the lucky position now of having a kind of a high level profile. So people, instead of me having to dig all of these things up myself, people have started sending me things. And this is, I'm in contact with people in the CIA and different other people. I don't know who they are sometimes, but they leak information that are sometimes absolute lies and sometimes true or sometimes partly true. So it's very hard to know what type of info it is. And a few months ago, somebody told me or sent me an info where it said the next four targets is going to be Dublin, Paris, Copenhagen, and somewhere in Italy. So I said, okay, fine. I had no idea if this is true or not. So I just put it aside in one of my folders. Then somebody in Dublin, on Ireland, sent me an email saying that he had seen this creepy image circulating in Irish press and also on Twitter. And he said it's a very eerie image. And the thing is, it looks like a postcard almost. And there's four images on it. There's first the image of it. It looks like the Grim Reaper, a female Grim Reaper, very dark statue. I think it's called Mary Malone or something like that. And then stamped on it in white, it says Israel now, Dublin next. Then the second image is the Mona Lisa with a big bomb in front of it, and it's stamped Israel now, Paris next. Then there's one of the Little Mermaid from Copenhagen, Israel now, Copenhagen next. And then it's the statue of David in Florence, I think, where it says Israel now, Italy next.
Wow.
So I thought that is a bit tasteless. I totally understood why he thought it was creepy. And then he also mentioned that they had a bomb attack at the Intel plant outside Dublin, but that was defused, but ISIS had taken responsibility for that.
Hmm.
So then, boom, this thing happened in Paris. And after I started looking into it, seeing that here we go again, false flag again, that was when it hit me. Wait a second. So I went back and I had a look. Dublin, Paris, Copenhagen, and Florence. So since I know that these people have this weird tendency of putting like almost like teasers out there right in front of our eyes, you know, hidden in plain sight, why they do that, either it's a sick psychopathic way of playing with us, or it's something they get off from, or I've also heard theories that they're very aware of the karmic laws.
Yes.
And they say that if they put it out there and we do not react, then the karma does not hit them. We can only blame ourselves.
Right.
And I think that is a possibility. I can only say it's a recurring pattern. So I thought, oh my God, Dublin has happened, Paris has happened. Could Copenhagen be the next one? So I went out. This was on the 13th of January this year. And I went out in two or three different big radio shows internationally. I said, since a drill is one of the standard ingredients in these false flag operations, the reason for a drill is, in my opinion, to get vehicles in position, explosive, extras, all of these people in position without normal people noticing. That is why they have a drill that then goes live. Since a drill is a standard ingredient, please, please be aware of, should there be any drills in Copenhagen? And if so, please go there, bring your friends, bring your cameras, bring your video cameras and so on, and film these people, why they, even before they start setting the whole thing up, make it very, very obvious that they're being filmed and observed. And maybe this is something for your protection, or it could be something with a more dark, sinister agenda. And if it is that, then maybe we will be able to stop it, you know, and for once be one step ahead instead of all the time being one step behind.
Right.
So I went out there, and then the next day on the 14th, a man sent me a photo from Denmark, and it was a poster of a Danish woman in a uniform, nice looking smiley face, saying, "For your protection, we're going to have a drill at one of the main train station in Copenhagen tonight." You know, and he said, "Could this be what you're talking about?" And I said, "Yes, yes, thank you for being so observant." So I pumped this image out on Facebook saying, "Please, please, please, this could be it. You know, this could be it. Please go there and film them." So people did, and absolutely nothing happened. So the day after, I thought, okay, here I am. Maybe I'm looking like a fool. I don't care. At least nobody got hurt. That's the main thing. And if something was planned, at least we stopped it, you know?
Right.
So I was fine with that. But then exactly 1 month later, on the hour, boom, the thing happened in Copenhagen, and very, very close to the exact same train station as where the drill was. So there was this very big interest internationally saying, how the hell could you predict this one? And when people interviewed me about that one, I said, listen, 3 out of 4. The next one will be in Florence. Let's stop it. Anyone in Florence or Italy, be aware of these drills. Be aware and go there once again, film them and pump it up on YouTube and so on, so that if they pull something off, we will be right there on putting the spotlight right on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing happened in Florence, even though the very day, next day, I saw that now the anti-terror troops in Italy was preparing for a new hit and all of these things, but nothing happened. So hopefully, if what I believe is true, we've managed to stop the one in Florence. And by exposing the one in Copenhagen as well, that could very well mess up that timeline.
Yeah.
Because Chip Tatum says they have a very, very strict timeline where all of these events are planned in with great care, because they, when they carry one of them out, there's a series of other things that they want to occur. And then if even one of them gets messed up, it can really change the whole timeline and mess it up, so that they will make problems for months for these people,
yeah,
globally.
Yeah.
So I say, let's keep messing it up. You know, that's my aim.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing that you got out in front of that one, but you got to be careful, man. And it's just interesting. Like, who does this traveling caravan of crisis actors work for? Because another pattern that some people are pointing out, and, you know, I don't want to get awkward or uncomfortable here, but it seems to be that when some of these countries are recognizing Palestinian statehood or something like that, that is when shortly after some Muslim extremist creates some terrorist attack in their country. At least that's the narrative that's happening. And then Netanyahu comes on and starts saying weird things and telling the Jews to come home to Israel. And it seems very weird, because that's all very foreign to me. I'm not really a religious person, but it seems like this conflict is spilling out in all these other areas, and that these false flags seem to be part of that conflict.
I totally agree with you, but it's like there are different themes for different false flags. And the latest theme seems to be evacuate the Jews and the Jewish population, get them back to Israel. And I would say help by doing that, also help to push out the last Palestinian pieces of Israel. But this is so weird, because as a former journalist, as a researcher, all different areas are totally fine to look into. You do not have any problems putting question marks around that. But if you point anything against the Jewish population, you can even be jailed in Germany if you put a question mark around the Holocaust or anything like this. I don't care if people are Muslim or Jewish or blue or black or yellow or green. If they got a big heart and treat their fellow human beings with compassion and respect, my God, I'm all for it.
Right.
But if you really start messing up and murdering and killing and slaughtering people, not okay. And I will do my absolute utmost to expose it. And here we are. So please, when I talk about Jews and so on in this context, I'm talking about it as a theme, because we have to look at these things as why, what is it they want to accomplish at this point? And I would say, just like you pointed out in a very good way, that Netanyahu had, right after these things happened, problem, reaction, here comes the solution. Netanyahu steps forward and says, oh my God, these attacks are going to continue. Question mark. How can he say a thing like that? How can he know that if he's not part of the problem? These attacks will continue. We need to evacuate, his words, evacuate the Jewish population back to Israel. We are at a point where the rest of the world have seen that, my God, they're massacring the Palestinian population. We're not talking about a conflict. We're talking about a population of not that many people that have been walled in with absolute massive big concrete walls. They have no weapons. Most of them are children, and they're up against one of the most modern war machines in the world. Mm-hmm. And these are just bombing the crap out of these poor, poor people. And it is just like saying that we have a conflict between Mike Tyson if he goes into a nursery and start beating up the babies. I mean, there's no balance whatsoever. So Israel as a state, I'm not talking about the Jewish people as individuals, because I don't even want to say the Jews, because we're looking at Zionists, which is a special group within the group type of thing.
Agreed.
Connected to the New World Order and all of these things that are going on. And Netanyahu, there's also, you know, in 2000, I think it was in 2011, when Netanyahu came and spoke in front of the Congress in the States, there were 29 standing ovations in the American Congress. That is a bit of a giveaway, wouldn't you say? Why? Obama got 25. And Netanyahu came there from this small country called Israel that the U.S. are pumping full with billions of dollars while not being able to look after their own population. 29 ovations. It is a bit like, what? So right. When he steps forward and says things like that, you have to see it on a different level than it's just the leader of just another country. We're talking about a country where the U.S. are on their knees in front of, almost like bowing. So, yeah. But the theme is, just like you say, you recognize Palestine as a nation, and we will hit you. We will knock you dead or knock you out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, before Charlie Hebdo, he said that. He said it would be a grave, Netanyahu said it would be a grave mistake to recognize Palestinian statehood. And that sounds like a threat to me, those words, grave mistake. And if a guy said this to his neighbor, and then a couple months later there was a shooting there, I think there'd be an investigation. But yet you have a world leader making a threat, and a couple months later an event happens, and apparently the best detectives on the planet don't make any kind of connection or don't even ask a question. But if it was you or I putting that kind of threat out there a month before an event, we would definitely be investigated.
Exactly. And it's very good observations you're making, and it's just plain common sense.
Man, it's pretty wild, and you are so great when it comes to doing this work. Clearly you have some serious attention to detail, and you do great research, and we're kind of winding down here. I mean, what do you suggest people do with this knowledge?
What they do, I would say, let's take the power back, folks. It is not difficult. Let's be observant. There's so many good, skilled people out there with a good brain screwed on, you know. So when you hear about a drill is a standard. It's just like when you make a pie, you need eggs, you know. Here, a drill is a major part of this. They need the drill to be able to get everything in position. So very often they would put it in the local newspaper saying, tomorrow we're going to have a mass shooting drill in your blah, blah, blah for your protection. When you hear about or see that, get your friends together, go down there and bring your cameras and film them.
Yeah.
You know, live stream right out on YouTube. Go as a group, because if you're only one, they might, you know, arrest you or something like that. So go as a group and just film them. Make it very, very obvious to them that they are being observed. because they have been pulling this one off for such a long time, in the dark, in the shadows, behind the scenes, you know, pulling the strings without us knowing it. Now, I would say, turn the spotlight spot on them, saying, we see you, don't even try,
right?
You know, don't even try to pull the trigger. We already know what you're up to. And then the more of us that can do that, as soon as we hear that, go there and just be there on site, so that even before they start setting it up, it's like, oh my God,
there's too many people here.
Oh my God, what are we going to do? That's the whole thing. There's too many people here. We won't be able to pull it off. Exactly. Exactly. And every time we disturb the timeline, boom, it can go for months. So this is, you know, like when I humbly believe that I managed to stop a planned false flag massacre outside the Bilderberg meeting in Copenhagen 2014, summer of 2014.
We did talk about that last time. Pretty fascinating.
This is the thing. Let's keep doing it, because Chip Tatum mentioned, you know, that by us doing that, he was there to support me, but just by a thing like that, that could have, you know, delayed things in Ukraine and other places maybe for a month or so, because they needed that one to be able to maybe shut down the internet or censor the internet. So that one can really have messed things up on a global scale. And every time we can mess up the timeline, we really make problems for them in a totally non-violent way, but a beautiful way, you know, transparency, and let's just stop it, because we're tired. We've had enough. It's time to transcend this obstacle in a non-violent way, and then let's have a beautiful party on the other side, you know?
Well said.
It is all part of the New World Order, you know? They need us to be fearful. That's the only weapon they have, you know. If we're not afraid anymore, the more we can see. If I sat here and I really honestly told you that I don't know if there is such a thing as a real terrorist, not the ones that we've been presented, you know, the ones with the balaclava and walking around screaming Allah Akbar, I don't know. After 30 years, if there really is such a thing, because every single time I look into these things, and as you know, I dig deep, it's the same story again and again and again. So if you look at how many things that has been done in the name of terrorism or for your security, you can't recognize the world that it was before all this terror started. And then if you start understanding that these are inside jobs, all of them just there to control you from a small little group, then the more fearless we become, because instead of us living in a totally mad world filled with terrorists that the only thing they're thinking of when they wake up in the morning is how to hurt you or blow you up or things like that, if you start looking out the window and see, my God, I live in a beautiful, beautiful place, but with a small little psychopathic group that are totally mad, totally mad. So I would say, let's get out of fear mode and see that we live in a beautiful world. It is a bit messed up, but this is the chance for us to transcend this whole to the next level. But we need to do it in a non-violent way. Otherwise, it will just continue, you know?
Right.
And the whole thing is, you know, this group that is behind so much mayhem in the world, because so many of these things are connected. Wars, you name it. I mean, GMOs and vaccines and chemtrails and false flag operations and massacres and all. It's the same group behind the whole lot. They've been working very intensely for many, many, many years and decades and centuries to centralize the power to fewer and fewer and fewer by design. So, but once we start seeing how few they are and how many we are, it is this is the whole thing. It's only by our cooperation that this can continue. You know, you say, oh, they're so powerful. They got all this high-tech technology. Most of them are old guys. Have you seen an old guy with a laptop? I mean, they can hardly turn it on and off. They need people like you and me and other people to control drones, to do all the secure, you know, all of these high-tech things. They wouldn't be able to change a hard drive,
right?
You know? So it's only because of us. And there's this beautiful, beautiful word that starts with an N and ends with an O, the word no. If we totally nonviolent just say no, no, when they try to push all of these things on us, it will come to a stop. The more of us that will do that, it takes courage. And when you see these beautiful, beautiful people in the States, for instance, where they have informed themselves about their rights, and like if they go to these illegal so-called border controls, you know, that are 100 miles inside the country, mm-hmm. and just absolutely do not cooperate, or when they are stopped by police and they start asking them questions and do not just bend down and bend over, you know, this is a beautiful way of taking back the power, just saying, sorry, very kindly, I'm sorry, I will not cooperate.
Right. Well,
because the people in uniform, they know it. It's like they say, can you please pull over there? They need to say that. Can you please pull over there? Because it needs, they cannot force you. They know they cannot force you. So they are taught, can you please pull over? If you say, no, thank you, but no, they can't do anything. Hmm. And this, you know, the beautiful thing, am I detained or am I free to go? Am I detained or free to go? They need something to be able to hold you, and if there's nothing there, they can't. This is just small things to take back the power. On my website, lightonconspiracies.com, I have a special little what you can click in the menu where it says what you can do, and it's just a lot of different ideas and tips and how to do it, what to do in different situations and so on, mm-hmm. and just stop cooperate.
Well
and
said.
Especially if you are in a uniform, because people in uniforms have to understand that it is them who protect the system, or this very, very, very criminal group. I mean, we're talking organized crime on a scale that the world has never seen before. They are the ones protecting them from normal people like us.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed. Well said. Well said, man. This has been super informative. We've gone a little bit over time, but I love talking to you, man. Would you like to remind the people, you just gave out the website again, but would you like to remind people before we really go about your book and how they can keep up with you and how they can help you keep fighting this good fight?
For sure. And by the way, I'm not fighting. I'm doing this totally nonviolent. It's not a matter of fighting. It's a matter of fearlessly exposing it.
Fair.
If you fight, they are made to fight. You know, they are made to squash you, to kill you. That's their game. So it's not a matter of fighting. It's a matter of taking back the power and standing the truth and transparency. With a focus of love, compassion, forgiveness, that is the way forward.
Right.
So to support me in my efforts, the most people are extremely welcome to, especially if they can support me financially, because so I can, you know, go to these places, be on site, move around, feed my family, and do this type of thing, because it's very time consuming and I'm not financed by anyone. I've done this for 30 years totally on my own. So on my website, Light on Conspiracies, there are donation buttons. There are a newsletter. Please sign up for the newsletter. It's once a month. I've got a membership area. I've got books. One of my books is Coup d'etat in slow motion. It's about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, but with all the connection into the Freemasonry network, to things like Iran-Contras, to the pedophile networks, even direct connections to the JFK assassination and so on. It is more than a thousand pages. It is a big one, but not a theory. It's all there, put right in front of you. And also what it says on the cover, just because I say it, don't buy it. You know, use your brain, read it. If it makes sense to you, if you can see the power of the things, the jigsaw puzzle being put in front of you, then spread it. But do it with a criticism, you know. Don't just swallow it.
Mm-hmm. Well, awesome.
And I've got another one called Shadow of Tears. It's a true story about how I took a bicycle in 1984. I was heading alone towards South Africa, but I ended up in Iran during the middle of the war, Iran-Iraq war. And instead of meeting a lot of crazy people, which I thought I was going to meet, you know, Allah Akbar shooting each other, that type of people, I met absolutely beautiful, beautiful people, but in a very, very dangerous and extreme situation. One of my new friends got murdered, and then I did everything I could and helped smuggle out one guy through former Russia, East Germany, up to Sweden. And then afterwards, we got another 7 out there. So Shadow of Tears, that's a true story. Loads of photos, everything about that thing. I'm trying to get that made into a major motion picture at the moment. So if anyone's got contacts or anything like that, or if people want me to come and talk where they are or anything I can do, please contact me. If you can just make it possible financially, I'm right there in the front line, doing everything I can.
Wow. Well, thanks again, Ali. It's been super great. You are the man. Be careful out there. You're exposing a big piece of the puzzle, and we know that that can be risky. So you got to take care of yourself. All right, man.
I will indeed. And listen, Greg, anytime you want me back, just let me know, and I'm right there here on standby.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. And they're happening so often now that it probably won't be long before we do this again.
There we have it, people. It is always nice to check in with Ollie. He is a good guy dedicating his life to these things. He's lost friends, risked his own neck, and he's such a positive guy. So I hope you liked it. Ultimately, I think it's a positive message, like Lennon Honor would say, that nothing really ever happens. It's just plays acted out on the global motion picture stage show. And I know critics of false flag researchers say it's disrespectful to the dead. Well, one argument they're making is that there might not be any dead, or at least a lot fewer than reported, but let's just assume that there are. It's disrespectful not to look into these things deeper. If you died in a terrorist bombing and your disembodied consciousness was out there following the aftermath, wouldn't you be offended if there wasn't an investigation? If people weren't trying to get a handle on the intersection between reality and the scripted fiction of the mainstream media machine? If everyone you knew just said, "Oh, that sucks," and allowed the elite to use it for their own agenda, that's what's disrespectful. So that's my response to the comments that get all high and mighty about being skeptical on what's paraded across the news networks. It's what we have to do. We've been lied to so often and to such extremes with zero change or consequences that it's now a lot of people's default reaction to major news stories to be like, "No, it didn't happen. I don't buy it." And maybe some of these things do happen, but so be it. You have cried wolf too many times, and we cannot trust the establishment until we've cleaned house, if we ever even get the chance. But I do appreciate Ollie and all his work. In the Plus Show, of course, we expanded on the events in Copenhagen, pointed out some instances of crisis actors or photos of victims being used more than once, a breakdown of the Ottawa shooting, and a look into the Pakistani school shooting last winter on the anniversary of Sandy Hook. Gotta be skeptical there. These things come in cycles and waves, we know that. And speaking of cycles and waves, our Moon Man Crow has written his second piece for THC, examining further into the Hattie-Bau research, connections between the planets and the octaves, the genotypes, and the mind, and all kinds of interesting stuff. Definitely check that out. He's writing those, and I'm putting them up on both the free and the plus websites. I think we might end up doing a show after the first 5 pieces and then another one after the last 5, because I know a lot of THC fans are used to us being audio-centric, and now we're talking about these articles to go and read, but I think there'll be plenty of material to bring to the airwaves, and our shows together seem to be pretty damn popular, so I also do apologize for some of the connection problems today. Ale was all the way out there in Spain, and I stitched together as much as I could in editing, but some of it was pretty disruptive. But overall, I'm glad we did it. They say things do seem to be ramping up, whether you're talking about typical global politics or investigations into a sun-moon matrix of control for the human farm that is our prison planet. A lot of emphasis tends to be on the idea that we're in the red right now. And maybe that's just a constant theme of conspiracy culture, that we're always on the precipice of great change, a new awakening, a new evolution, or the climax of the elite's game plan, an Armageddon move, and the big checkmate.
Who knows? I plan to be doing this show for the next 50 years, so I can't start hopping in with the chorus that this is the end, or I'm going to look real stupid at 80. But it would be pretty awesome to look back from the last THC that ends up in existence and consider what we'll learn about and what will happen between then and right now. Is it even reasonable to think podcasts will exist in 50 years? I don't know. But that's the show this week. We got three more shows in April, plus I'm going to be putting out a free 2-hour bonus episode and a real special 1-hour episode with a great guest for the Plus people. And the month is already a third over, so I have a ton of work to do, but the good news is you'll have a lot to listen to in the next 20 days. But I've done my part. That is it for me today. It's your move, caravan of crisis actors in the Global Terror Tour. Your frickin' move.
Well, they tie that yellow ribbon around the oak tree. They've worn out all the prayer in their hearts. All along thought they were rooting for the home team. As they're sent to the game and torn apart.
Yeah.